My neighbor? That wasn't a suitcase that I brought in. No, I'm not going on a trip. That was a machine to make records. And I wanted to show it to you. It does look like a suitcase, though, doesn't it? I'll open it up. You can see it. I borrowed this from a friend so I could show it to you. I'm very much interested in things like this. Now, this is a blank record. That means that it doesn't have any talking or music on it at all. Show it to you here. See, it's smooth. All of this is smooth. There aren't any grooves in it at all. So there'd be no place for a needle to go into. Now you put it on the turntable like this. I guess it's called turntable because it looks like a little round table and it turns. Yeah. Plug it in. Oh, when I was a little boy, I thought the greatest thing in the world would be to be able to make records. I brought the microphone with me. Connect it. There. Now, this is a special device over here for cutting records. Let's see if I can get this in there. Where is it? There it is. Good. Now you see right down here is a very special needle. And that needle goes into this smooth record and makes grooves in it when you're recording. I'll just show you how it works. Ready to see it? Okay, I'll put something on here like this. I want to test this record so that I can show my friends how one makes records. Did you see all the fuzz that came out of that groove? See? Looks like hair. And that all came out of those little grooves there. Okay, now let's just play this and you'll see what it sounds like. I want to test this record so that I can show my friends how one makes records. So, that's the end of that part. Why don't we try a song with this machine? So you can see more and more fuzz come out and make more and more grooves. The thing I'd like to sing for you is "It's You I Like." Ready? It's you I like. It's not the things you wear. It's not the way you do your hair. But it's you I like. The way you are right now. The way down deep inside you, not the things that hide you, not your toys, they're just beside you. But it's you I like, every part of you, your skin, your eyes, your feelings, whether old or new. I hope that you'll remember, even when you're feeling blue, that that it's you I like. It's you yourself. It's you. It's you.
Going to be playing with this playset today, and this is the play mat for the playset.
Did you ever have any kind of play mat type thing? Like, I remember my brother had one for playing dinosaurs on that had like different cave features and mountains and stuff. And and so this one has these different qualities, like you could tie something on here.
Yeah.
And it has this kind of intersection or axis, and then this mesh pool. Yeah, and you can actually form it into different shapes. It doesn't even have to lie flat. And then there's also all of these parts. So I just want to encourage you to sort of acquaint yourself, like, tactily with these pieces. And you'll find that they all, that one, you can also slide. See how, like this, you can slide it.
Yeah.
Which makes even more shapes. So the pieces, they can bend in different ways. Some are bendy. Some, like this one, are a little bit more like the one you have in your hand, where it just kind of like forms different shapes, but it has a rigid skeleton to it. And then there's like some soft shapes and some harder pieces. Some are heavy. Some are sort of self-contained, like these little wooden guys. There's lots of different, you know, endless ways to play with this. But as we're working through some ideas, I also want to encourage you to use the tape and markers to label anything as that becomes helpful or interesting for you. Because one way to play with this is to assign different regions of the mat or different pieces or combinations of pieces with like concepts or ideas that you want to play with.
Interesting. Okay. So start labeling?
Well, at any point, label. And I'm just going to lead through some questions. I have a whole bunch to choose from, so I'm just going to kind of be in conversation with you and also play a little bit with you, or as much as you want to invite me in to play with this play set. Sure. The first question that's really kind of fundamental to all of this is, do you know what you're ready to learn?
That's cool. That's a nice question. As an artist, I always want to learn new technical skills. A lot of times that is like pretty high on the list and pushes other things aside. But I also want to learn things that I don't wish I had to learn, but maybe want to learn better, like digital marketing skills.
Reluctant learning.
Yeah. How to be a better friend, a better partner is a thing that often shines forward.
I'm kind of proposing this whole playset itself as an assessment tool.
I'm very interested in learning more skills with basic composition, actually, which I
composition.
Think relates very well to
okay,
this.
Yeah, this is a great compositional tool.
I was just doing a flyer, and it was looking pretty horrible, and I was just like, I just don't.
So like graphic composition, and but also I think I'm picking up that you're thinking about it in like broader senses too.
Exactly, yeah. Well, no, not really.
No, well, I can help you think about it in broader senses. And also feel free to just, the other benefit of this playset is you can just tinker with it endlessly. You know, it doesn't all have to be purposeful. Play doesn't have to be purposeful. So as much as you just feel like tinkering with the elements. But so composition and the time in composition and the time of composition, as Gertrude Stein said or wrote, how can we call this learning objective of composition, how can we call it that's maybe more particular to you as a learner? Like maybe what's its essence?
At its essence is something that is related to what we already see and recognize, things we recognize, and being able to re-recognize that. I don't know if there's a better word for it, but yeah.
So we're dealing with recognition, and I wonder if you recognize a piece or an area on the playmat that you want to label composition, and maybe we can kind of also go from there.
I recognize a lot of objects individually. I think that's where my brain gets stuck. I'm recognizing this and this and this and these and this. So,
if we call an area of the whole scenario here composition, or even an object or set of objects composition, then we can also think about how other things interact with composition.
Okay.
Maybe including you. Maybe you have a kind of avatar on this in this playset.
I don't see that.
The composer.
The composer. Yes. Okay. For some reason, I see that as outside of the composition itself. But maybe other people.
But they're in relation with. I mean, composers in relation with composition.
Right. Yeah. Of course.
So maybe tell me why you want to learn about composition.
I think it's a way to see a larger picture, to see sort of outside one's self a bit.
Like and a field.
Yeah, yeah. Right, a composition of just characters in one's life.
So would it be helpful if we thought about this whole operation as composition?
Yeah.
And then... I wasn't sure if it didn't feel like the right thing for you to have like an avatar of yourself, but maybe there's an aspect of you in relation, there's an aspect of you that you wanna work with here in this field of composition.
Well, I really like this thing. So yeah, why don't we use this?
Do you wanna call that something? Give it your own name, like it's not just any golden retriever, it's crackers or whatever.
Sure, yeah. We'll call you Sticks.
Sticks.
Sticky.
Yeah, sticky. Sticky is also an adjective. If sticky is part of the composition, what else do you want to put in relationship and dynamic arrangement with sticky or stickiness?
Sticky has a lot of ways of existing itself, which is kind of why I was drawn to it. So yeah, there's definitely other ways in which objects can relate to it. This tiny Venus of Willenberg or whatever that place is can support it.
Okay. As you're exploring the capacities of sticky, maybe other capacities are revealing themselves as differently knowable, differently recognized in relationship to sticky?
That's certainly, yeah.
I mean, I sort of wonder what's the opposite of sticky, at least in this universe, in this composition?
Okay, flat, the landscape underneath sticky to me in this composition. Yeah, is the this taking up, filling negative space, because if sticky was just on the table, it would exist very differently. So it's almost becoming the plane of its existence or something. I don't know if it's negative.
Like this kind of context.
Yeah, it gives it the context, yeah, I guess.
So the context and sticky, the figure, are they oppositional in the sense that there's like an antagonism between them, or are they complementary or something?
They're very complementary, and in fact, sticky wouldn't exist in this way without plane. So
would plane exist without sticky?
Plane might exist without sticky, though. Yes, I think so. Yeah, I don't think they're that complementary. They're just sort of, it's not necessarily fully symbiotic or something like that, but.
So plane is not so contingent on sticky.
Yeah, plane pretty much.
Contingent.
Yeah,
no,
plane pretty much.
Dependent.
Yeah. Is almost like the table elevated, not just because it's actually bringing it up, but because it's adding and creating it. It's holding the space, creating the space for the sticky, I think. Mm-hmm.
And so when you're thinking about the dynamic relationship between sticky and what did you call the plane?
Just plane.
Just plane. Yeah. Just plain plane.
Plain plane.
So what's, I guess when you consider this interplay between sticky and plain plane, what questions are emerging for you about composition?
Why settle on, you know, this one? Why not just go and go and go forever?
Mm. So why settle on that one? Why not go and go and go?
Well, I just did it fast. I liked this one fast.
Uh-huh. Are you also saying that because you want to learn more about this one, or you want to stick with this one?
I guess I'm unsure of, I have expectations of what I'm supposed to do and what I'd like to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's relating to those two ideas.
Yeah, so let's back up. What are compositions good for?
They're good for creating a whole that is greater than the sum of its
parts.
Oh,
a whole with a W.
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. So creating unity, creating integrity,
strength, creating ability, creating ideas.
What is composition not good for, do you think?
Yeah, good question. It's not good for singularity, I guess. It's not good for independence or something like
that. Like for conceiving of oneself in a vacuum?
Yeah. Oneself, one's work in a vacuum. Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So composition isn't good for narcissism.
No. It's not good for narcissism. Yeah, because, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if we can challenge that by, could you make like a narcissistic composition?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right now?
Yeah, yeah. You want that?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, done.
No. I mean, I'm interested to see.
Well, I think that's how, cool, like, because what is narcissism to me, right? Or not? And I have to say, this is to me reminds me of the Dalai Lama. I think they give them toys, you know, when they choose. I don't know enough about this, unfortunately, but the Dalai Lama is chosen from their choice as a child.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that there was, maybe this is like the god awful
scene in that Scorsese movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a god awful westernized version of it, right? Where, yeah, but,
is the heap a narcissistic?
Maybe this could be the narcissism, where.
Why are these elements left out?
Oh, you can't see.
I mean, I'm just asking. There's no.
Well,
not,
as soon as.
Not yeah, inferring yeah, any value.
Then people know that.
And so here's what's special. Is there like hoarding going on now?
It's hoarding, but it's also like you can't even see it now.
I mean, I can.
Well, you know, you give me 5 more minutes.
Oh. And this
and that's
is
part of the composition too, because
the placement
it's,
right
yeah,
in front of me.
Right? It's meant to
taunt me.
Taunt yeah. I was gonna say be a fake gift, maybe.
Oh. You know? Yeah. Seems like that's something there should be a word for. Oh, there's
what
a terrible
is gift horse?
But yeah, there is a really racist term for it. But that there ought to be a not racist term for a fake gift.
Yeah, there's.
There really ought to be. There's MacGuffin.
I don't know.
But
what that
a MacGuffin is not really necessarily a gift, but it's sort of like the false object. I know about it mainly through like film studies, like in Hitchcock movies. There's often a MacGuffin, and the MacGuffin in Hitchcock movies is usually the thing that draws a lot of attention to itself, or there's a lot of attention drawn to it. And then that ends up being a big nothing.
Huh.
Like, you're following the spy thriller thinking, or the protagonist is
right.
following one thing, and that's nothing. Yeah.
I feel like that is the narcissist's gift.
Composition.
Right, yeah, the narcissist's composition.
Well, I wonder what criteria, so if we are using narcissism as the objective, as the maybe the particular learning objective for this composition, what criteria could we use to assess how narcissistic this composition is?
To me, how much is revealed to the world with anything in general, doesn't even have to be an artwork. That to me is a sort of a level of like measuring that narcissism. And
I think that can be really,
yeah, or context even, just simple context is given. If it's withheld, any information,
the contextual clues for this, to my mind, they do a lot of informing, mainly because it's on a table in an art gallery.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What context could this appear in where it would become more itself?
On the street, I like to take a lot of photos of trash, and like I can imagine seeing this.
You're calling my playset trash?
No, I'm calling the composition I made trash. No, the playset's lovely. Yeah, I know people get very triggered by that word. I feel like because I will pick a lot of that up and take it with me if it's like a small enough piece of something I find on the street.
Is trash a good way to learn composition?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Yeah. I look at it a lot for that reason. I take the photograph of it for that reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To make a composition later.
No, just because I like how it looks.
Because you want to study its composition.
Yeah, because I'll look at it as a composition and study that. Mm-hmm. The pieces I'll take later are just smaller pieces. Usually this is like larger piles of people I've left. Yeah.
How would one know that they've learned composition well enough in order to teach it?
I mean, can't anyone teach anything if they think they can? In a way, I don't know. I teach sometimes, so sometimes.
Do you teach composition?
A little bit. And I always do a lot of like YouTube videos and tutorials and looking at ways to look at it. Like recently, last semester, I asked students to do a landscape. And I think it was because I don't ever do landscapes at all. And I was kind of interested in looking at a ton of landscape painting. I showed them and I looked at mostly like, what is it? The Hudson River School, those people.
Thomas Church. Frederick Church and Thomas Cole.
Yeah. Just like looking through that, looking at these compositions, which it's funny that they become almost secondary. Anyway, sorry, I'm going off on a tangent. Mm-hmm. But they become a little secondary to like the quality of the painting and the content in there. But they're just actually extremely strong compositions too, which I think also I didn't push that enough with when I was teaching it. But to get good enough at something to teach it, I feel like...
Specifically composition. And you're talking about landscape. Is that an example of composition?
To me, that's an example of composition.
And often landscape is thought of in an aesthetic sense as something you can kind of get lost in.
Yeah, that you can get lost in. Right. That's one way to, I think, put it right. Or just have that moment of sublime or whatever that's called. But there's definitely very different versions of that, like a Fontana, like, you know, the cut is, in my mind, not a landscape, and it's very singular, but it's still relating to a whole, and it becomes a composition in that way. Like, Fontana would be able to teach composition, but I don't know what he would teach exactly. And I think of, like, the Bauhaus, what was the woman that did all the weaving?
Annie Albers?
Yeah, Annie Albers, yeah. That repeated pattern is also composition. Mm-hmm. And those are in themselves little compositions repeated, right? And mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of wonderful teachers of composition. So maybe just teaching the things that they've done would make you able to teach it yourself.
Well, why do you want to, did I already ask you why you want to learn about composition?
Yeah, and I didn't have a good answer. I think I like it. Just I really enjoy it, you know? It's
what Gertrude Stein, in her essay, Composition as Explanation, she's also exploring how the composition is sort of a conspiracy of all elements in a time and space, in a moment. And so a composition is always changing. It's always dependent on all of the elements everywhere, how everyone is doing everything, mm-hmm. she says. Mm. So this applies to like a text or an artwork or something that we might think of as static if it didn't deteriorate.
Yeah.
So we could think about even like digitality, something that doesn't deteriorate as still a composition in that it's understood within its larger social, context. Cultural, yeah. political context, which itself is a composition. Mm-hmm. So that was just to say that your answer before has nothing to do with your answer now.
Oh. I'm known to do that.
I mean, it need not have your answer earlier about why you want to learn composition.
What did I say earlier?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Well. But why do you want to learn about composition? Why do you want to learn composition?
I love compositions, I guess. And I want to see each possibility that emerges, you know, with different things.
Each possibility?
Yeah, yeah.
So something that I've been thinking about with teaching and learning is competing legacies for bodies of knowledge.
Oh.
And so if we think about composition as a body of knowledge, mm-hmm. are there competing legacies for it? Are there different paradigms for understanding what may or may not be involved in calling something a composition or learning composition?
Yeah. I've never thought of them as competing. For some reason, I always think of this as, maybe this is another reason why I am interested in it. It seems like something that is democratized.
To clarify, I think it's like just, I meant competing just to say like colonial influences and patriarchal influences and what we consider education, which kind of relies on what we consider knowledge, competes in that it's sort of versions of knowing that edge out other versions of knowing. Mm. So competing maybe like in what we call a Darwinian sense, you know, like what gets to survive.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would absolutely agree that takes place. Yeah.
So what are some different ways of thinking about composition? Maybe outside of
those paradigms?
Outside of whatever you kind of naturally default to.
Well, I don't know them, I feel like. Otherwise, I would.
Yeah. How would we go about knowing them?
Spending time with people who might not be the same identity as ourselves, I think, is
people
one
who don't consider composition the way that you do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that would be also a way of learning composition, is to go around finding people who don't agree with you about composition.
Totally. Yeah.
If you were to teach a course in composition that involved that tactic, how would you organize that?
Well, recently I helped install a show of an artist who lives in Zuni Pueblo, New Mexico. They lived here for a few years and then moved back there. But taking a trip there and maybe working with them for a week, not necessarily on their work, but just, you know, working around them, I think would be a good way.
Putting yourself in a different context, and you're putting yourself in a different composition that you're not familiar with. Mm-hmm. That sounds like that's part of how you would learn that.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. At least as a way to start, because you would be observing it, right? Rather than maybe fully learning it, right? I mean, mm-hmm. even that immersion is not, I think, fully accepting and being able to, like you said, teach that necessarily, mm-hmm. right? Like, this is a certain person's way of doing things. This would not be that, but it's a way to start doing mm-hmm. it, especially if you've never done that.
What's happening in this composition? What are there? I'm seeing two parts here.
Oh yeah, that's just the tools or the storage for then adding and placing into the.
What if one were the teacher and one were the student?
Oh, cool.
Which is which right now in this moment?
I mean, the default is that the composition is the teacher to the student, but.
And that composition is the one that's like embracing lines and.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, right. This is the one showing the grid. Mm-hmm. To that, right? Mm-hmm. In the traditional sense, of mm-hmm. course, yeah. But if this were the teacher...
The pile or that banana-shaped thing?
Oh, the banana-shaped thing is nice. But if the pile were the teacher instead...
Yeah, what is the pile teaching? What could the pile teach the...
What could the pile teach? The pile could teach, that there is just as much... There's just as many grids in the disorder, if you kind of look for them. So
at grid school.
At grid school.
At grid school, this teacher is like, there's also grids here.
Yeah,
at grid school. Grids is all we're learning.
Grid school is like, hey, yeah, grids are all you're learning. You must conform to the grid. Yeah, that's an option.
Is it just too obvious what this composition is teaching this composition?
I guess. Like, what other things are there? I mean, a lot of it, to me, is not necessarily... You know, there's just, like, miniature narratives going on in each of these things that then relate to a whole, right? Like, this could just be, like, a little cityscape, right? And then...
Because it's a grid.
Yeah, and there's bricks... You know, and this is like building up like a, mm-hmm. this is the power plant, mm-hmm. this is the meat going into the power
plant.
This
is like the pre-modern city.
Yeah, well that's like where I grew up in Denver. This is like the mountains outside of the city, right?
Oh, so. Why are they outside the city? Why is that not considered the city?
Oh, it's just where the city is built, if we're going by the government
By the municipal lines.
Yeah.
But, mm-hmm.
but people live... all the way up and down, out and through. Yeah. Yeah.
First, just figure out how you want that oriented. You'll notice that it can lay flat or it can also fold up and
okay.
kind of stay in different positions if that's interesting to you.
And so we're gonna use the playset to think and speculate and pretend together about different modes of engagement for learning, about learning objectives, and then also, I guess, assessment. I'm proposing this whole playset as maybe an assessment tool.
Wow.
But but not of you,
okay.
just sort of to assess options.
Okay.
So there's really... infinite ways of playing with this, like any playset. You know, there aren't rules or anything, but that tape back there and the markers, that really comes in handy if there's any piece of any zone of the playmat. You notice there's like the intersection or axis there, which can maybe also help orient your zones. If there's anything you want to label at any moment, or if you want to label one of the pieces or a clump of pieces, if you kind of get like a little village set up going and you want to label that, then by labeling it, you can kind of, it helps me also play with you and work with you so that we can actually be rearranging concepts that way.
Okay.
So, since this is about teaching and learning, my first question, and these are just prompts, and this isn't like a procedure, I'll just kind of choose from these basic things, but we can also go off in any direction at all. But
I've been beginning these conversations by asking people if you know what you're ready to learn.
No, I don't know.
Maybe we can backtrack. What was the last thing you remember learning?
Hand quilting.
Oh.
Yeah.
And how did you learn that?
I read a book, and I probably looked at some, like, videos online, and then I practiced.
So hand quilting, meaning hand stitching?
Yeah, like the particular way of, there's actually like a certain kind of movement that you do with both hands, like a choreography, that's a little bit different than regular sewing. I mean, you don't have to quilt that way, but it's like a traditional way.
And how did you know that you wanted to learn hand quilting?
I like the way that it looks, and I was curious. I thought it would be fun.
Was it?
It was fun. It was very satisfying.
Did you make a lot of quilts?
I just made one hand quilted thing, but now I want to make more. Anyway, I've done hand quilting, but not using that actual like traditional technique of like manipulating your hands and the needle in this very particular way.
What does that look like?
You have a thimble on your third finger. One of your hand goes, your left hand, or I guess I'm right-handed. My left hand goes underneath. And then you push the needle down with your third finger. And you have to feel as soon as like the point comes out, you turn it back up again. And so you can get like four stitches on the needle.
Yeah.
And then push it through.
Uh-huh.
And so it's a very particular way. And I guess if you get good at it, you can get very even stitches. But it still looks kind of very different than using a machine.
It sounds like you didn't make like a bedspread quilt, maybe you made something else quilted.
Yeah, it was like a little art. Well, I'm being diminutive. It's an art quilt. But it's small in size, so.
Yeah. Maybe. Could we use the practice, the technique of quilting to help us think about something else you might be ready to learn?
Okay.
Like, what does quilting help prepare you for?
It's like an integration. It actually is, I think that's part of a really satisfying thing. I mean, it's physically an integration, and then there's just something that actually feels weirdly like emotionally like integrating, even though that's kind of like mystical, but like not very rational. There's something about like bringing all these different layers together through this like just this thread, you know, this drawing basically.
You learned a new method of integration.
Yeah.
Do you think you might want to write integration on a piece of tape? And maybe that'll give us something to work with.
Okay.
And if you know where you want to put integration already, go ahead and do that if it's somewhere on the mat or if it's one of these pieces. I don't know if you got a chance to look all through.
This is quilted too.
Yeah,
I mean, the playmat is quilted.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you use that technique.
I think we more or less did without knowing what to call it, but we didn't have a thimble.
Okay. I guess I'll put it here because there's like a lot of things being pulled together.
Okay. So you put it across like a rigid section of the mat and sort of hanging off and also bisecting one of the axes.
Yes.
Do you think you've concluded learning integration?
No.
Are there other aspects of integration you might want to learn? Or do you want to set that aside for a while? Maybe it helps lead to something else.
Yeah, that's kind of, I feel like that's like a life skill. Probably when I'm dead, maybe I'll be
integrated. You'll be disintegrated when you're dead.
Well, but I'll also be integrated probably. Well, it depends, I guess, how I'm going in a weird way. Like, who knows, like what kind of burial methods will be for like when I die. So maybe there'll be some kind of integration.
Like, rather than disintegration.
Yeah. I mean, maybe my body will disintegrate, but it'll be integrated into, like...
Yeah.
You know, have you heard about these, like, natural things?
The mushroom?
I don't know.
Outfits?
No.
You can be suited up
in a mushroom outfit, but you have to be suited while you're alive.
Oh, so really?
It's like tailored to you. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that'll be mainstream when I'm dying.
Yeah, not just these fringe mushroom outfits. What is the type of integration you've already learned? Maybe what is that? What kind of learning does that prepare you for, having that under your belt, hand quilting?
I don't know if I can, like, actually extrapolate in, like, any reasonable way.
But we don't have to be reasonable. Okay. And also,
or
you're welcome to just sort of tinker with any of these, fidget as much as you like.
Okay.
And feel the different weights.
Like, yeah.
Some of these are heavy. And
this one looks really fun.
It is.
I feel like I'm getting too hoity-toity with the integration.
Well, maybe we can throw in bingy boingy.
I'm kind of into what do you call that, the learning that, like, where you don't have a learning goal, emergent curriculum.
Oh, you know? Uh-huh. Yeah,
so I feel like I don't know what I want to learn.
So how will you know that the learning's taking place?
Maybe after.
So it's not as important to you to know during?
Yeah, I like to not, I don't know, I kind of like to not know what I'm doing too much. I don't think that's that weird.
No. Like, you're, so we could say you're learning something right now, but you won't know until later tonight.
Yeah, probably. Huh? Or maybe I'll like learn it part of the way through, or I'll figure out.
So emergent curriculum also sounds a little hoity-toity. Is there a way that you want to talk about it that's,
yeah,
more?
Well, I'm a teacher too. Mm-hmm. So I like the idea of being, like, very flexible, mm-hmm, in the experience of teaching, where, like, you're seeing what your students respond to, and you're able to, like, modify and kind of, mm-hmm, go with the flow a bit, mm-hmm, and see, like, what is drawing interest or enthusiasm or joy.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes if it's, some things are stressful, it can be, depending on what the kind of stress, it can be like a, I think, a good stress. Like, it's good to be stressed sometimes. It's like a part of learning.
Which discomfort. Kind of stress is good?
Like, this feels new and uncomfortable.
As a learner more than a teacher?
Yeah, I guess it's a feeling. I mean, as a learner, I don't know, maybe as a teacher.
Oh, wow, you're really undressing.
I'm sorry. No, did this come out?
It must have. It went in that other point.
Oh, sorry, I'll put it back.
No, I was just sort of transfixed.
Okay.
Because who knew that there were also yellow knots inside there, all coming through that hole?
Yeah.
What? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's like a little fishy.
Mm-hmm.
I wish you had some, like, needle. I would sew it back up again.
Oh, yeah, I'll fix it back at home. What resources are required in order to practice emergent learning or emergent curricula?
I mean, I think assessment is, like, you have to be flexible with assessment, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you have to be willing to not know what you're assessing. Or maybe that's not true.
To not know what you're assessing.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you have to, like, put assessment aside for a little bit, mm-hmm, until you figure out what kind of your students together with you decide, like, the learning goals are.
But what if your students are kind of like you and don't know what their learning goals are?
Well, then
they just want to feel it out.
Yeah, then that's okay. Then you put that, you leave it alone.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So what resources are required for that? Flexibility, you were saying.
Yeah, flexibility, being open-minded, right? Not being attached too much to, like, an outcome for a little while, mm-hmm, which is hard.
For how long do you think?
In a practical way, for me, it's like a class.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm within, like, an institution. Minutes? Yeah, 45 minutes or 60 minutes, maybe two classes. Because if there's too much play, I feel like at a certain age, I don't know, I'm working with kids, so I feel like they become, like, antsy and they want, like, a goal or something, mm-hmm, to put it to use.
Right. They want to figure out what it applies to.
Right. This is like a potato.
Yeah, sort of like a rotting potato.
Yeah. This is a nice thing.
Yeah, it's like looks like a telescope.
Yeah. Can I ask you questions too?
Uh-huh.
So I don't know, how do you work? I wonder if it must be pretty different with adult students.
Are college students adults? sometimes
oh, you
they
can
don't
totally
even
take it
want
apart.
To be. I guess you can, yeah.
I'll put it back together.
No, yeah. That didn't even dawn on me that, of course, yeah, there's no stopper at the end there. What is it like working with older students?
I mean, in terms of assessment, like, do you have learning goals at the beginning?
So
yeah, I do actually have learning goals.
Yeah, I guess I prefer the word objective because it'd be better if it was sort of like projective or something, a sort of area of possibility. But also, I think the parameters of the course that are outlined in the syllabus that are formally approved by the credit-giving agency middle states,
yeah,
that give credits to the institution, that like really trying to figure out how to break everything.
I thought it was bad. I don't think I've broken any of your things. Do you want me to stop playing with
no,
them?
No, it's great.
I thought these were toys.
They are. and so you're testing the outer limits.
I didn't break any of them.
No, nothing's broken.
I just like wanted to figure out if it had like a bendy wire inside.
Oh, yeah, I don't think so.
Okay.
So the way that I approach assessment is I recognize, you know, with the students, the parameters of the course that are sort of ordained by the accreditation organization, middle states,
okay,
and say like this gives us a territory to explore.
Okay.
And so we do know that we're focusing on literature and critical theory and research.
Yeah.
And writing. So we can bring everything back to those practices.
Yeah.
And so that's how we can also sort of orient ourselves. So we don't have to like worry that we're not doing marine biology,
right,
you know, in right. that class. Because sometimes that class can, the literature and critical studies class can start to feel so abstract that students wonder, like, what are we not talking about in this class? Like, this is making me rethink everything.
Right.
And then, so then I'm like, well, we're still actually honing these skills.
Yeah.
And so I now even remind students what skills we're learning, even as we're kind of noodling, you know,
okay,
or as it feels like we're noodling.
Yeah.
Partly to reassure students who might have some kind of anxiety around too much confusion or disorientation,
okay,
which is necessary for learning, but
yes,
just to kind of let them know.
Safety,
and learning
safety
is what's happening. Because sometimes even when we're having a lot of fun, that can be immediately followed by a reaction of like, uh-oh.
Right,
what,
right.
Why are we having fun?
Right.
But then also, usually I wait until the second class meeting. I want to get right into things in the first class meeting. In the second class meeting, I draw attention to this statement that I have written in the syllabus that's sort of in a really almost like wall text kind of way in a museum or gallery. It breaks down some basic ideas and history of grading.
Okay.
And presents it as a phenomenon, not a given.
Yeah.
And also presents it as a phenomenon that has a context and has certain applications that we can also question and critique,
mm-hmm,
and that also we can sort of explore around that. And so the end of that statement also says that my proposal for the semester is that we won't work with grades.
Okay.
And then we have a long discussion about like how that feels, how it feels to read that text and how it feels to think about these things and what other ideas come into play as we're reevaluating what grading is and where it comes from. And sometimes we get deeper into it and I say, yes, if it has a little whiff of a racist, sexist, ableist technology for oppression, your nose is right on.
Yeah.
In fact, ding, ding, what it is.
Yeah.
So, and then we talk about like, what else will we do instead and how, what might that feel? And then I continue to check in with them throughout the semester. And also as we do things together, I'll sort of ask like, what influence would grading have had on what we just did? And how does it feel to do what we just did without grades?
Yeah.
Which I feel like, in a practical sense, I can only do because I've been at that school for a long time and I have built up enough trust.
That makes sense.
I don't think it's something that's would be easy to do of coming into like a different institution and just say.
Maybe it depends what kind of institution. Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, I also want to honor what they want to do. And so I'm like, if you want to be good, like in quotation marks, at drawing in the way that you think of being good means, I also want to give you the tools to do that, if that's what, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, I want to honor what they want to do and stretch the idea of like what art is or what it means to be like good at something or good at art.
So you wanna...
Which contracts, I think, especially around the age that I'm teaching now.
Which is middle school?
Yeah.
Do you feel like you've already learned how to stretch the parameters of good art making? Is that something you feel like you know well?
For myself?
Yeah.
I mean, I get confused. I'm like, I don't know if this is good or bad a lot of the time. Or some of the time.
But wouldn't that mean that you've successfully figured out how to stretch?
I guess so. That's
not such a
fixed, I guess so. Yeah.
Petrified understanding.
Yeah, I learned. Good job.
I wonder if you kind of trace back that confidence in that ability. When do you think you were ready to teach that sensibility that you're describing?
I guess I've gotten better at it with experience, but I feel like I started teaching without totally knowing what I was doing and in a very practical way, like this is a thing that I could do.
Would it be interesting to use the playset to kind of model a moment of realization around that, or maybe model like a classroom or anti-classroom for learning that sensibility of having a loose and springy sense of what's good in art?
I could play with rearranging things in a way that I feel like I get really stuck on, this is not about teaching now, like it has to be like aesthetic. Mm-hmm. I mean, actually now kids use apparently the word aesthetic all the time.
Whoa.
Like it's really in the
kids.
Yeah, like middle schoolers are like, that's aesthetic.
What does it mean to
them? And it means to them like it's good or pretty.
Oh.
There's not like different kinds of aesthetics. Mm-hmm. Or like there isn't the idea,
it's just an aesthetic, monolithic.
Yeah, which is interesting. But I do feel like I want
these... reduce as well to thumbnail.
Yeah, exactly. Or screen or something. Uh-huh. Yeah, but I think I'm like that too. So I think it would be
maybe you want to rotate it then.
So yeah,
kind of.
Like I feel like this part, I'm like, oh, I feel like weirdly attached to it.
Uh huh.
So that's probably not good.
Well, maybe you want to keep figuring out about what's going on in there. Then it's sort of like this lean-to.
Yeah, it's a lean-to
feature.
Yeah.
And now you're obscuring that or shading the lean-to even more.
I feel like that reminds me of like being a kid.
Like building, a fort.
Yeah, a fort. Uh-huh. Yeah.
To have this insulated area in which you can
hide.
Kind of experiment and set your own parameters.
Yes.
Yeah, the uneven terrain of the playmat is complicating. It's like the rug, the edge of the carpet in the living room.
But it's also nice that it's not right in the center. I feel like, you know, it makes sense for a little, like, fort to be in a corner.
What would you be doing inside that fort?
Reading.
Reading?
Maybe. Yeah, reading a book. And I don't know. Eating some snacks.
Mm-hmm. In the past or in the present?
Both. I like to snack.
And read.
And sometimes. I don't like reading as much as I used to.
Yeah, that seems to be common.
Yeah.
So it seems as though pleasure is important to you in learning.
Some fun. Fun.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What threatens the pleasure in the learning that you participate in with students?
It's funny, like, I have mixed feelings about grades. Part of me is like, oh, grades get in the way, assessment gets in the way. And then other times I think it doesn't, actually. Like, I think...
In the way of what?
In this kind of, like, goal-oriented, end-oriented mindset. Yeah, I try to do assessment that's based on, like, activities or like habits or actions, but it still kind of like doesn't totally work. So it's hard to like, there's this thing in education too, like, it, you know, everything has to be as fair as possible.
Mm-hmm. You mean like a standard?
Right.
But don't all standards default to norms?
Right.
And all the kids aren't already beginning as norms.
No. So then there's like, well, you could do growth, you know, start to end.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all a little bit like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not totally, it doesn't totally make sense. It's not totally fair. It's not like, I don't think that you can have some like objective.
Well, isn't encouragement and conversation and response like always just fair to partake in?
Yeah. Sometimes, but then sometimes not, I feel. I don't know. Mm. Maybe do you ever feel like, okay, a student like doesn't know what they're doing, or they're playing and they're like not at a point where they want to be talking about what they're doing? But it's also different stage.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to make them too self-conscious. Classes,
it was more like that, but
yeah.
Yeah, I guess I let them know that learning scenario, the collective discourse, is a social scenario.
Yeah.
So that there's also options, of course, to explore all kinds of things privately outside of the social realm. But in the social realm, it does help to kind of keep things in conversation with others.
That makes sense.
Like around a seminar table or something.
Yeah, I think it's different maybe because it's like both private and public. I feel like students are making art in a classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like this, you know, tension between like respecting a student's kind of being in the flow of something and not wanting to interrupt it.
Yeah.
Especially if there's like some kind of learning that's happening that at that point you feel like can't be put into words or shouldn't be put into words.
Yeah. Isn't that so frustrating how those frayed ends won't fit through the
piece? Yeah. I didn't realize how long I was trying to thread it.
If we had scissors and we cut a clean cut, I think it would be possible. Oh my goodness,
but you know what I could do?
Oh, maybe that's the way to
solve it. Can I do that?
Yeah.
Sorry.
You'll need just a little bit of tape because you don't want to load it up with tape and then prevent it from going through. No, but that's probably the way. That's probably enough.
Yeah, let's see what this sounds like. Look at all the fuzz that came out of those grooves. Mm. You see, all of that is what the song took up. You know, I was just thinking, I thought an awful lot about making records when I was little. And I grew up to be able to make records. Yeah, there are many things that, when you think about them when you're young, you'll be able to do them as you grow. Okay, let's listen to a little bit of this song. But your toys, they're just beside you.